This is Matt Monroe Jr. and I'm appearing with Suzanne Hunter at the World of Arts and Entertainment.
Now it's such a delight to welcome onto the show Matt Monroe Jr. Great to talk to you.
Hi Suzanne, thanks for having us.
Absolute pleasure. Now it's such a thrill for your own fans, but also fans of your father, Matt Monroe, that you're currently back on tour and you're going to be coming to Surrey very soon. But before we talk a little bit more in depth about the show, I just wanted to talk about how you got started. Now, your father sung in a way that no one else could, such an incredible golden voice on the song Born Free. But it's been said that you were born to sing. Did you feel destined for a life singing and performing, and when did you catch the bug?
I suppose I was like any other child, really, you know, who sat there in front of the mirror with a brush and pretended they were a rock and roll star or what have you. But I don't know, there was something inside me that I always thought I was destined to be on stage. But I suppose it really started for me when back in 1977, my dad was doing a summer season in Great Yarmouth, and completely unbeknown to me, on the very last night of the show, my dad dragged me up on the stage to sing a song with him. Mm-hmm. And it was the greatest night of my life, but it was also the most frightening, because it was the only time I actually looked at my dad, and he wasn't my dad, he was Matt Monroe. And I swore back then that I was going to share the stage with him once again, but unfortunately that never happened. But that was the reason, I suppose, or the start of my singing career.
Oh, that's wonderful. A Portrait of My Love is such a wonderful song, but if you were to paint a portrait of the family man, Matt, how would you describe him, and what was your experience of him as a dad growing up?
Well, someone once said to me on radio a few years ago about Frank Sinatra Jr., who obviously follows in his father's footsteps, and they asked me about the comparison, and I just said, you know, there isn't a monetary amount you could give me to be Frank Sinatra Jr. And what I mean by that, and I do not mean that disrespectfully, but it's, you know, Sinatra is Sinatra, and the image and the baggage that goes along with that. You know, whereas my dad brought us up very, very, you know, with fantastic morals, very, you know, you treat people the way you want to be treated, and he kept us very, very grounded. Mm. So I had a very normal upbringing and I had an amazing family life, and yeah, I mean, everyone knows him for being a singer, but he was a wonderful man and he was a fantastic father.
Oh, that's wonderful to hear, isn't it? I mean, On the Street Where You Live, Who Can I Turn To, Hello Young Lovers, all wonderful musical theatre songs. But did your father have a passion for musicals, and what influences did he pass on to you at a young age?
Well, he just wanted to sing, and, you know, I mean, Dad left school when he was 9 years old. He couldn't read, he couldn't write. He came from such a poor family that he had to go and work, believe it or not, at that young an age. Mm-hmm. And he was a true Cockney. You know, he was born in Shoreditch in the East End of London. But somehow, and I don't know, I still don't really know how it was done, he managed to educate himself, have this wonderful talking voice, and then he became a singer. He went out and he'd turn up in pubs and just go around with a can for people to put money in, and it started from there. And I think it's an amazing achievement to get to where he was. And you may not be aware of this, but when Nat King Cole died, Capitol Records in America literally searched the whole of their own country to find someone to replace him, and they couldn't find someone. Mm. And they asked Matt Monroe, which was an amazing honour for my dad. It really was.
Really? I didn't realise that. Oh, it's amazing. I mean, he's just amazing in his own right, isn't he? But to be asked to also emulate someone else is incredible, isn't it?
Well, it is, because don't forget, my dad also made it at the time when the Beatles were in the charts, Elvis Presley was in the charts, Sinatra was in the charts. Yeah. I mean, Sinatra said he was one of the three greatest singers in the world. So, you know, there's not many Londoners or British people who can have that acclaim. And I don't think even Dad knew how good he was. You know, he was just a very relaxed person who loved to sing and meet his audience after a show.
Yeah. Oh, that's wonderful, isn't it? I mean, he sort of came across as a very sort of affable, relaxed person, obviously affectionately known as the singing bus driver, which makes him sound quite down to earth, doesn't it? But I mean, was this the case, or was the house filled with musical friends and sort of memorabilia and gold discs, or was it more sort of down to earth?
Absolutely. I mean, over the years, I mean, his, you know, I remember Christmases at our house, and his true friends were there every Christmas, and people like Dave Allen, Morecambe and Wise, Sid James, and me as a child. Bearing in mind I would have been anywhere from 10 to 15, 10 to 16. Mm. To me, these people were just normal people. I didn't even realise that half of them were in the public eye or anything like that.
Yeah.
But Christmases were filled with... we loved Christmas as children, because we were allowed to effectively do what we wanted to do, provided we didn't get into trouble. So me and my sister could stay up till any time we want and watch, you know, do anything we want, really.
Brilliant. Yeah.
You're saying about that, sort of, they were just ordinary sort of people to you, but it must be quite a strange sort of parallel universe, you know, for children of performers or musicians. Could you see your, you know, your dad or your mum at home, and then suddenly they're on the telly? What was your earlier sort of recollection of seeing your father on the stage and on TV? How did it make you feel?
Well, I saw him on stage a lot of times, mm-hmm. as a youngster, and it meant, and I don't mean this to, I'll explain, but it didn't actually mean anything to me, because to me, as a child, my dad was a singer. But it, to me, in my head, that wasn't a particularly glamorous job. It was just a job. That's what he did for a living.
Yes.
It was only when we did This Is Your Life with Eamon Andrews, mm-hmm. I realised, hold on, this is not quite right. And I realised that everyone at my school seemed to know who my dad was, but I didn't know who their dads were. And that's when it kind of dawned on me that, mm-hmm. hold on, I think my dad's a bit more than just a normal person who goes 9 to 5, Monday to Friday.
Oh, absolutely, yeah, most definitely.
Did you ever sing with your father sort of at home before appearing with him on stage at the age of 13?
No, never. Mm-hmm. Because I wasn't particularly a great singer in any shape or form when I was a child, and I was just more frightened more than anything else. I remember I saw my dad when he came and he actually came with my mum to see me at my school choir, and I was petrified. I wasn't worried about anybody else out there. I was just petrified that my dad was in the audience. But magical memories for me, really was.
Absolutely. I mean, it's been said, like, some Bill Withers' daughter, when she went into the business, she was very sort of apprehensive of what her father was going to think and, like, his sort of approval. So it must sort of play on your mind a bit to sort of think, oh, you know, my dad's watching me doing my singing.
I mean, I talk to my dad literally 30 seconds before I go on stage every night. I talk to him always. I always wear his handkerchief, which he always had, and I always have his stool on stage, which he always had, and they come with me wherever I travel around the world. So I've embraced it now on the basis that I love having my dad with me, and I know he's with me.
Yes.
And the reason, I don't know whether this particular show that I've done, maybe I've waited 5 years too long to do it. I don't really know.
Mm-hmm.
But I purposely avoided doing this for so many years because I didn't want people to think I was just living off his name. So mm-hmm. I learnt my craft and did my own. I've done my own shows for 20 years now.
Yes.
This is the right time to do his life story.
Oh, that's wonderful. I mean, I was going to say, did you ever sort of worry about comparisons, or were you just very excited to sort of pay homage to him at that point?
Well, I mean, as I said, my own shows, I do my own style of music because I'm a swing singer anyway. But
mm-hmm.
obviously, when I do my own show, it's about my life. Well, of course, my life includes my father. So
yes,
that gives me a lot of free license to talk about him and sing about him and things like that. But I realised at an early age that I'm always going to be compared. I will always be compared to the day I die. And it's something I've accepted now, but it was very, very difficult for me at the beginning.
Mm. I was going to say, because someone like Zowie Bowie, you know, very much changed his name and, you know, went into a completely different career. But being Matt Monroe Jr., you know, it's very much with you. Did you ever consider changing your name or anything like that? Or?
I did, but very, very briefly.
Mm-hmm.
When I did Opportunity Knox, for instance, initially, we were going to use the name Matthew Fredericks, because my middle name is Frederick.
Yes.
And in the end, they said, well, instead of calling you Matt Monroe, we'll call you Matthew Monroe, mm-hmm. thinking that no one would know. Mm-hmm. And the day before we did the show, it just exploded in all the papers. So that just put pressure on me as well.
Yes.
So, but listen, I've learned to live with it. You know, whether you're from a famous family or whether you're Joe Blog starting out, it's a hard business, and no matter how talented you are or untalented you are, you will go through a hard process and you learn your craft. And you know, if you're strong enough, you'll get through it, and if you've got talent, please God, you'll succeed.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's a very unforgiving business, but it's also wonderful when you're on stage, you know, in those magical moments, isn't it? I mean, when you performed the duet with your father at 13, how did you feel, and what did you sing?
We sang the song Yesterday, which mm-hmm. I still include in every single show that I ever do around the world, because it brings back memories.
Yeah.
It was, Suzanne, honestly, it was the greatest night of my life, but it was also the most frightening, because as I said, when that moment on stage, I looked at him, and for the first time ever, he wasn't my dad, he was Matt Monroe.
Yes.
And I was petrified, but it was one of the most special nights of my life.
How did you get yourself through that? Did you sort of just imagine you were just singing to friends and...
No, I can be honest, I got through it very badly. I was so nervous. The way it came up was because I was appearing in summer camps in the summer, because we were down in Yarmouth for 4 months, and I didn't realise my dad had known that, and so he decided to bring me up on the last night at his show, and it just completely threw me. It really did. But as I said, it was magical.
Absolutely. I mean, in 2005, you aptly toured with the new show called Legends Live On, which took you to over 40 concert venues across England. And of course, in 1986, after your father's very untimely death, you took part in a special tribute in front of over 2,000 people. And I mean, you're no stranger to performing to huge crowds and celebrities, and even the First Lady of Indonesia, Imelda Marcos, who watched you perform. Who would it surprise us to know are super fans of both you and your father's work?
Well, my father's work, I mean, Sammy Davis is a great admirer, and Sinatra is a great admirer, and people like that. I'm just very lucky. I mean, I've been to the Philippines now probably six times, and we go out to tens and tens of thousands of people every night. And you're right, Imelda Marcos and the royal the family out there, and it's surprising, you know, because I suppose I feel a bit like my dad. Why do people want to come and see me sing? But that country in particular, I just find is, well, they've become family to me. I mean the whole country. They're just the most wonderful people.
Yes.
They're so humble. Half the country is struck with poverty. And yet they'd give you their last grain of rice, and they live their lives with permanent smiles on their faces. They taught me a lot about life. I mean, it's just wonderful country to be in.
Wonderful when you find a place that you really feel that you want to, you know, give something to, and that they really respond back to you, isn't it? Yeah.
Well, it is. I mean, I'll give you an example. I got a shock when I first got there, because I didn't know what to expect the very first time I went there. There were thousands of people waiting at the airport, and I didn't know that they were there for me. We got out the airport, and I had a motorcade take me to the hotel, and we got to the hotel, and all the staff of the hotel are lined up in the street waiting for me to come with 50-foot posters and everything. And they said, look, you know, you've got a press conference now, and this is 9:30 in the morning. And I walked in, and there was 145 press. There were six camera crews, and I was there 2.5 hours. And I hadn't even, I'd only been in the country about 3 hours. It was crazy. But again, it's something you learn about the business, and you either embrace it or you don't.
Absolutely. You never know where your fan base is going to come from, do you?
Absolutely not.
Thing, isn't it?
Yeah. And it's weird, because in certain countries, my fan base is 25 years old upwards. In this country, it's more elderly. It's probably 45 years old plus. Mm-hmm. Because this country is predominantly more my dad's fans than my fans. Mm-hmm. But I do have a fan base here, and they're fantastic. They're so loyal. They come to, you know, every show that we do, and it's a very warm show, you know. It's filled with love. It really is.
Oh, that's brilliant, isn't it? Don Black, as you know, your father's manager, spoke very warmly about your father on this show, and what a joy he was as a man and singer. Do you recall Don coming to the house, and did you ever get to work alongside him as well?
I've never worked along with Don, but Dad and Don were best friends as well. I mean, they made each other. I mean, back in the days when they were working out of their Hackney office, Dad was singing a lot of songs, Don was writing a lot of songs, but nothing ever happened, and all of a sudden it clicked with Walk Away, and so they made each other, and Don has gone on from there after Dad died with Andrew Lloyd Webber and various other things, and he's an incredibly successful man, and missed greatly.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for me, the Oscar for Born Free wasn't just John Barry and Don Black. It was really your father. Without his unique and unmatchable voice on that song, it wouldn't have been half as good. But how did your father feel about the Oscar win? And did he ever go to Hollywood?
Yeah, he went to Hollywood and stuff. I mean, you're right. Dad didn't get the Oscar. In fact, what people don't realise is the day it was filmed, it was previewed, the actual film, my dad's version of the track had been taken out of the film, and no one knew. So Don, John Barry, my dad rang the producer, and absolute chaos ensued. And eventually the song was put back in, and the rest is history, so to speak. So very, very nearly, that song was never, ever released.
You can't imagine it now, can you? But I mean, at the time, they make some very strange choices, don't they, sometimes, the producers? But I'm so glad it was it, aren't you?
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, did you get to, obviously, collaborations galore with John Barry on Wednesday's Child, Quill and Memorandum, and From Russia With Love. Did you get to meet John Barry, and do you remember much about your father telling you?
Oh, my God, yeah. I mean, I remember, you know, and Sir George Martin, for instance, who was my dad's record producer, but was also the Beatles' record producer.
Yeah.
So. I met the Beatles, I met Sir George Martin, Sammy Davis. I mean, I can go on forever. John Barry.
Fabulous.
I've met everyone, but yet again, I was so young back in those days, I didn't realise the importance of what they did.
Yeah.
And these are very, very aspired and unbelievable talented people.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, talking of Russia With Love, did you get to go to any of the Bond premieres or Bond-related events on the back of From Russia With Love?
Not me personally.
No, I was going to say. Going back a bit now, isn't it?
I remember when Dad went to the... only because I know the story, that Mum and Dad went to the premiere of From Russia With Love.
Yeah.
And it was strange because Mum was only interested in hearing Dad when it was going to happen in the film. And Dad wasn't interested at all. He was just interested in the Bond film itself.
Oh, brilliant. Oh, isn't that funny? Yeah, different focus. I suppose when you're a performer, you probably know this, you're sort of a bit tentative of seeing yourself up there, aren't you? Or sort of, you know.
Oh, very much so. Yeah.
Watching it back. But, I mean, we all have a favourite Matt Monroe song, and I do agree with Don Black, who said On Days Like These was one of his favourites.
Sure.
You know, Matt's golden voice is just so special. The vocals are unmatchable. I just waft off to Italy and picture the Italian job straight away. But what did your father think of that song? Did he have any favourites? And indeed, do you have one or two songs that you love more than the rest?
Yeah, I mean, Dad loved Portrait of My Love because, one, it was his first big hit. But he actually recorded it for my mum. It was about my mum.
Oh.
So it was special to both of them, obviously.
Yeah.
For me, I've got two. My favourite song that I love Dad singing is Softly As I Leave You. Even though that has some very emotional ties to me, so sometimes it can be quite difficult for me to listen to that.
Yes.
My favourite song that I sing it is, I personally love singing Walk Away on stage. It means a great deal to me.
Oh, yeah. So emotive, isn't it? So wonderful.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And we'll talk about the show in just a second. But, you know, through the wonders of technology, I know Natalie Cole was able to sing on an album with her late father, Nat King Cole. And I believe you were able to achieve this as well on the EMI label that you sing with, Matt Sings Monroe.
I actually did it way before Natalie, actually.
Oh, brilliant.
The difference was she did it on stage, whereas I did it on record.
Oh, I see.
But I had always performed it on stage. I'd always performed one song, a song called We're Gonna Change the World.
Mm-hmm.
We put a brand new arrangement to it. But I'd always sung it on stage with Dad prior to the EMI recording. And then, as you say, EMI signed me up and we did a duets album of the hits. Not so much the hits, but songs that Dad had recorded, because I purposely wanted to stay away from the big hits.
Mm-hmm.
And we duetted the whole album, and it was that was amazing. That was amazing to do. And there's not many people who can say, one, that they've sung with Matt Monroe on the stage, and also that they've recorded with, because Dad never recorded with anyone.
Oh, wow. That really was a momentous one, wasn't it? I mean, especially with the technology. Very forward thinking, isn't it, as well?
Oh, absolutely.
Brilliant.
And, you know, again, looking back then, because that must be... I don't know, that must be 15 years ago. I wish I knew more about what I know now to what I did then, because I think I would have possibly done the album different with different songs and everything else.
Yes.
But I think every performer will say in hindsight, do this differently. You know?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, you as a perfectionist. I suppose maybe it could be remastered.
I don't know, possibly
yeah.
so.
Yeah.
I was thinking of bringing a new duets album out for this particular tour, but yet again, I didn't want people just to think, I was doing it, put my name forward, so to speak. So I declined against that, but the show was more important, really, and about putting Dad, you know.
Oh, absolutely. So, I mean, you've mentioned, obviously, because you are a very successful solo artist in your own right, will there be solo parts of the show, or is this very much a dedicated show to your
father?
No,
I actually sing 13 songs in the show, which is half a show for me, effectively. I'm not on stage all of the show, because we have a narrator and... as I said, there's video clips and there's all sorts of things going on all the time.
Yes.
But all the songs I sing are to do with Dad's life and his recordings, apart from one. There's one song that I do near the end, which is a song that I recorded about 5 years ago now, which I recorded especially for my dad, which is a song by Luther Vandross called Dance With My Father.
Oh, I love that song. Yeah.
And that has to be in the show.
Yeah.
When I record, I actually sang it a few years ago after I recorded it, and I swore that I'd never sing it again on stage because it's so emotional to me.
Yeah.
But I can't leave it out. It's so relevant to this particular show.
Absolutely.
So, it's in there.
Wonderful. I mean, you've been painting a wonderful portrait of your father up and down the country in this new tour. And as you mentioned there, I'm watching and thinking, you've got visual as well as audio, and including rare footage and home movies. Tell us why you decided to do this on this tour, and was it quite a long process to compile all that archive footage?
Well, I think looking back in hindsight, I wish I'd done this 5 years ago, because this is 30 years after he died.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I'd done it 20, because if Dad was alive now, he'd be 85 years old. And so obviously there's a lot of people, unfortunately, fans of his who are no longer with us, who's possibly missed out with the chance of seeing that. But I just felt 5 years ago that I wasn't ready to do it. So now this was the perfect time for me.
Yes.
As far as putting it together, it was probably the biggest nightmare I've ever had to deal with in my life. If you can think of the hundreds and hundreds of hours of video footage, the clips, the movies, the home cinema, the pictures, and then we had to write a script, then I've got to work out where I want to sing and what songs I'm going to sing. It really was a nightmare. And if I told you that we started about 2 weeks ago, and on the day of the actual show, of our opening night, we still hadn't seen a complete run-through of the show and whether it was going to work or not. So it was, that's how tight it was to getting it ready. And it went beyond my wildest dreams. I just didn't expect it to be received the way it's been received so far. It's been amazing, really. Worth everything.
It'll be all right on the night, as they say. I mean, it sounds, sounds like a tremendous piece for all the senses. How you're finding the audience reactions exciting, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, I say at the beginning of the show, I'm going to make you happy, I'm going to make you sad, I'm going to make you laugh, and I know I'm going to make some of you cry. And it's done all of those things, and that's what I wanted to do. It can't just be happy, happy. There were a lot of things that happened in my dad's life which were sad, not just the fact that he passed away.
Yes.
It's funny. There's a lot of funny things in there to do with my dad, and that's what we wanted, you know. And, you know, there's parts on the film from Cliff Richard and Bruce Forsyth and Morecambe and Wise, and it's my dad's life and how he, you know, what he went through to get where he got to. And it's an amazing story. If I'm really honest, we wanted the show to be 2 hours. It's not 2 hours, it's probably 2.25 hours.
Mm-hmm.
and that was cutting it fine. It could have easily been a 4-hour show.
Absolutely. It's going to rival Hamlet.
Absolutely.
Or a Martin Scorsese film. But
yeah.
Well, I mean, it must have been tremendously difficult to concise and precise that down, because there's such a wonderful life. How many people have had such an exciting life? And it's wonderful to have the chance to share that with people, isn't it?
Absolutely. You know, and I also say at the end of the show, you know, don't go away sad. Please be happy, because that's the way my dad would have wanted it. Yes, it was hard, but he'll admit himself, he was incredibly lucky to do something he loved, and the fact that he was adored was just amazing to him. You know, he still found it very difficult that he found it very difficult to accept that why people would want to come and hear him sing. You know, he was a very humble man.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's no doubt if he was born American, it would have been even a more different life, so to speak. But he's one of Britain's biggest exports, and he's around the world, he's a massive, massive star.
Yeah, absolutely. I just adore your father's work, and it's going to be wonderful to see it, you know, with yourself. And I mean, you are up and down the country as we speak, and you're going to be in Surrey, and you're coming to the Epsom Playhouse on the 25th of October. Have you been to that venue before?
I've never been to the Epsom venue itself, but I'm excited because I was born in York.
Oh, a local boy.
And so I'm really looking forward to being there.
Oh, nice.
The only time I've been to Epsom is I played golf there.
Oh, dear. I was going to say all the races, all the horses.
Absolutely.
Oh, brilliant.
I'm looking very much forward to that.
Oh, a nice homecoming. Well, I know it's going to be a very special night indeed, and I wish you so much success with it all, Matt. And
Suzanne, thank you so much.
I just want to say thanks so much for being on the show.
It's a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
And that was my very special guest, Mr. Matt Monroe Jr.
Brooklyn's Radio. Loving arts and entertainment.